anybody else have any comments along that?
Well, I think one of the problems that Cliff spoke about the Department of Labor, and I think our community colleges are responsible some for this shift to the Department of Labor, but when you're setting a training program, the community colleges, or some of them anyway, are a little too much adamant that instructors be have a certain academic stature. And unions, for instance, they want some journeyman to do it, so they get in a row with a community college instructor and they look for another hole. They find it in the Department of Labor. And they go out and pick the instructors and they move on. So I think we've got to look at that area. But I think if we can possibly come out of here with a policy statement, and our whole thing is that is in the funding. We've got to get one source of funding so we can plan ahead with this thing. We're not going to lick it this year or next, but we've got to start. And I think the true policy statement, we can probably at least steer the legislature, and I think would have a great effect on the federal too, because the same thing's happening in every state that's here. Everybody's in the act, but nobody's in it. And if we can develop one source of funding and clear-cut guidelines as to who has what at what level, I think we're off and running now.
Well, Dr. Soboloff, would you agree that as a result of this, that the two or the people that are involved, like Dr. Hartman and Dr. Wood, develop a joint statement that the two boards could be responsible?
That sounds feasible.
I'd also just like to add some comments to the area of vocational education runs a little bit beyond, I think, what we've immediately discussed. The AFN has their on-the-job training program. You'd have to coordinate with them. The military bases have their programs. These are outside the BIA, although in many instances, as far as the military bases, the BIA helps coordinate these things. And when the kids come in from the villages, a lot of them will go right to the BIA to get their jobs out on the bases. But these are vocational technical programs. And I further might add that there possibly should be more screening so that the recipients of these jobs or the candidates for these jobs know absolutely what they're getting into. But the scope of this vocational education goes just beyond the BI itself. It goes beyond the state. There are many areas that are overlapping each other. There are many areas of funding that are overlapping each other. Has been very ably stated here in several corners. There is not one central area of coordination. It will be difficult to attain that central area of organization, however, because there are so many areas.
Funding's been so uncertain. It's been stop and go this year. We have a tremendous federal program, and there's hundreds of thousands of dollars available. And 2 years later, that's all gone. There's nothing left, and so we have to scrounge around to try to find. We need a sustained base of funding, even if it's only a small amount. If we know it's going to be there, we can plan then how to use it effectively. And I think through Mr. Hartman's office is a place to put it. And his request from the, and it's not going to be a federal program that's going to give you sustained funding. It'll have to be a state program that will give you the continuity that you must have in this. And only one other comment I'll make on this. You never want to work under the illusion that training people for jobs that do not exist at the end of the training period has any merit. If there aren't employment opportunities available to these people once they have the training, we've done more harm than we have good in terms of attitudes towards the effort by the people that we've trained. And the creation of jobs is not anything that the educational world accomplishes. It's a broader society that does this. But we can make continuing study, close relationships, keep our finger on the pulse of development so we know months in advance what these employment opportunities are likely to be. Then we can amount the training program so that people come out about the time the jobs are available. Now, if you do this, you're never going to be able to present a budget to the legislature, to the Congress, which specifies that we're going to need 12 clerks and 13 computer programmers and 7 people in the woods industry, axemen or something, at a particular time. You're going to have some faith that this is the level of funding to provide training for a certain number of jobs, but that's going to change continuously. This year, emphasis is on A, B, and C. Next year, it's L, N, and M that there'll be emphasis upon. But you have to have some faith that this sustained source of funding to provide training for whatever the X number is, 10,000, 5,000, 3,000, 1,000, whatever it is. You have to have faith in that without having to go in and present a detailed account that we're going to train 13 clerks in Bethel, and we're going to train 6 in Fairbanks, and 2 in Anchorage, and 1 in Nome, and so forth. You can't do it. You can't guess that far ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to bring another example. We had some MDTA courses in the last couple of years, and we wanted to go to the villages to bring in young people. So there's nothing in the MDTA money to provide board and lodging and transportation. So we go to the BIA, and they said, well, we're out of money. So we had to give up that. Then 6 months later, the BIA comes to us, say, we've got money now for 30 people, but we then don't have any money for MDTA. So there's just a mismatch of things, and I think we've got to try and get it to one source for the whole funding.
Get stable funding, you can handle the rest of it.
Any other questions?
I found a lot of philosophy here, but I'm not quite sure what conclusions we come from. I think that the suggestion that the board is going to meet again is pretty good, but we're here now. And if we're going to have a meeting once a year, that means it will be a year before we're here together again. I think that the board should jointly direct Commissioner Hart and Dr. Wood to develop philosophy, and I personally think that since the state Department of Education is primarily involved with coordination, or say with the going to the legislature for the funds, since these monies are primarily in the Department of Education budget, and ignoring the Band-Aid programs and the federal largesse, which may or may not be available, I think that the state itself has to establish what it wants to do as far as vocational education. Within this, scope, I think that the Commissioner Hartman should establish the budget from state sources, and that the administration of the program, if it properly be through the community colleges, I think this should be developed in a policy statement. I should think it should be presented to the legislature so that there is a cohesive program that everybody can go along with. Right now, you can sit here and talk about the MDTA money and the fact that the BIA has money at some time and things don't jive. We all know that. What we do need is a program at the state level, not the local level, because the local boards is, according to Bart, can't fund it at any rate, even Anchorage. So you need it at the state level, and the administration and the policy making should come from right here. And I think that the joint board should take a definite stand.
Well, if there's no other any objection to the suggestion that has been made, then we presume that Dr. Wood and Dr. Hartman will have a small chore on their hands to develop this.
Make a matter of record.
Is that right, Dr. Wood?
Very well. I was going to say that with the leadership that Dr. Hartman has shown and the inclusion in his budget, which is now in the governor's office, of approximately $500,000 to really attempt to develop a greater state-directed adult vocational program, that perhaps the joint boards should make a strong statement in support of that request. I think that how that money is used should be determined once it's appropriated to the State Department of Education by the commissioner and his boards working with us and others, but be put out where it will be most effective. If it will be most effective at a community college, I would hope it would go there. If there are other places where it's most effective, it should be used there. But I think the important part that this rather large request for vocational state for a state vocational program should be endorsed.
We will see to do that. Shall we stay on this subject, or shall we go on now to another subject?
Mr. Chairman, if we're in agreement on this one, and we can take this as a matter of record as far as Commissioner Hartman is concerned, then we can proceed to get our staff to help us in developing this statement of policy and outline the program. And I do hope that we have a strong statement that will go out to support Commissioner Hartman's budget request this year when we're called upon to make our presentation before the finance committees of the state.
Very good.
We have met on this, we have agreed on it, and we want to back it.
You pass, you draw up the resolution, and we'll pass.
But I would like to have time to go into the second topic today, if you can. That there's a specific wording of this you want to vote on together, why would they put that in the consensus? And I can go on to that one on the second topic here is one that is of critical importance for the future. And that is the role of instructional television, instructional radio, well, in education at all levels in this state. And I think that this topic is now very much in the forefront of consciousness of the entire American public because of the controversy over the communications network and the charge that it is attempting to control the government and to order the way of life for everybody. But we have Dr. Northrop here, who is the governor's appointee to a special commission on developing, I think, planning for the instructional television and the whole business of use of satellite communications, I believe, in Alaska. And I wonder if we could call on him to launch this and pinpoint what you see as areas of concern for these two bodies that are meeting jointly here today. Would you agree to that, Mr. Blackburn?
Yes, certainly.
Dr. Northrop? Dr. Northrop is a faculty member. He's head of our KUAC, but he's also head of part of the speech department's operation here at the university, and we've lent him to the state. We've also found a way to fund him. not out of state money.
First of all, I should point out that in the matter of satellite communication, the governor has appointed Mr. Charles Buck, who's the director of the Division of Communication, to head up the total satellite communications development for the state, and I've been asked to help him and advise him to provide inputs so far as educational uses of satellite communication are concerned. And the governor appointed about this time or a little later last year an educational broadcasting commission, which Dr. Hartman chairs. And that commission asked me to serve as their executive director. And shortly thereafter, the governor then asked that I provide this help to Mr. Buck.
Okay.
I'm going to give you kind of a quick, almost news report of some of the things that are happening rather rapidly and quite recently. If you've read the papers in the last couple of days, you know that in Guam, a satellite earth terminal belonging to RCA is being loaded on a Navy ship for transport to Kodiak, and that a similar earth terminal located in Manila and owned by Comsat Corporation due to be transported to Fairbanks. Both of these terminals are part of a proposed demonstration of the distribution of educational television by satellite within the state of Alaska. The demonstration was originally proposed by Senator Gravel last June and has since been supported by the remainder of the congressional delegation. And the commission and the governor directed Mr. Buck and I to write the official proposal to NASA for the use of their ATS-1 satellite so that the demonstration could be conducted. That proposal is now in the hands of NASA, although as of this morning anyway, we don't know whether they're going to say that we can use their satellite or not, but we anticipate that. Two of the Earth terminals, at least as best we can determine, are on the way. And there remain an additional two terminals to be found and placed in two other locations. The demonstration would involve transmission from Fairbanks to the satellite of educational programming and reception of that programming in Kodiak, Nome, Fort Yukon. And Kodiak and Fairbanks stations, are on the way, at least as best we can determine. So that's the current status of the satellite demonstration. Governor Miller has indicated his support for this plan by officially signing and sending to NASA this proposal that was drafted earlier in the year, and has moved to add to this demonstration several other communities through a distribution of videotape programs by mail, so that not only the three communities that would receive programming by satellite, but also several other communities would receive educational programming on videotape through the mails. In addition to those two quite recent developments, we understand, and again, I guess I can make the same kind of statement Dr. Hartman made about what might be proposed to the 1970 legislature. We understand that the governor will submit to the legislature these a bill to create and broaden the Educational Broadcasting Commission by statute. It's a commission appointed by the governor last year, and he's now asking that the legislature create that commission by statute and add membership to it. And he's asking for funds to allow the commission to operate in fiscal 1970. Both of these requests were initially submitted to the governor by the present commission. And the commission is also submitted to the governor, and we anticipate proposals on these, but we're not sure, at least at this moment, what exact form they will take. But the commission has asked for funds to establish Alaska's first broadcast educational television center, and for a certain amount of supplemental funding to provide a base for the programming and a little of the distribution money for this satellite demonstration. Now, in addition to these things, the University of Alaska is requesting funding to equip and operate its space for educational television in the Fine Arts Facility, which will open shortly here on the campus. Now, there is a need, and I think perhaps this might be one point that you may want to speak about, for the funding that the commission is requesting in terms of establishing a broadcast ETV center. Need to consider a combination of that funding with what the university is requesting in order to take advantage of some federal matching funds that are available to do an adequate job of equipping one center for the entire state. There's really no need for two large ETV production centers in Alaska at this time. They're just very expensive things. Television is an expensive business. And it would be better at this point, I know the commission feels this way, and I believe the feeling is also present here at the university, to adequately finance and fund one place where this production can take place. That kind of brings us to at least one point in the development of educational television. In addition, there are developments going on in educational radio. An Office of Economic Opportunity Agency, the Community Enterprise Development Corporation in Anchorage, and working in cooperation with the Association of Village Council Presidents in the Southwest Alaska area, have submitted a proposal to OEO to fund a radio station in the Bethel area. The commission has been in contact with them, and we're now pretty much in agreement to try to get some federal funding to help establish the equipping of the station down there, and request the Office of Economic Opportunity for some operating funds for such a station. Kind of station that we're talking about would be able to rebroadcast material received by satellite from the university and elsewhere. In addition to a television satellite demonstration, we also have written into this proposal some radio experimentation. It's much less expensive to transmit radio by this satellite. To give you some order of the magnitude here, these television earth stations would sell, if you went out and bought one new today, for about $250,000. For about $2,000, you can buy the same piece of apparatus to communicate with the satellite for radio. And so we are now in the position of knowing that the foundation has granted to the University of Alaska funds to purchase two radio satellite links, one for Bethel and one for the University of Alaska, but they'll pretty much be meaningless pieces of apparatus unless we can get some means of retransmitting that radio signal down in the Bethel area. Once it gets down to that satellite receiver, it can't be distributed unless you can broadcast it somehow. So, hence the efforts on the part of the village council presidents and the commission to get some kind of transmitter operating in the Bethel area. Very quickly, I could outline for you existing educational broadcasting establishments in the state. There is at the present time an instructional television operation in Anchorage and in the Fairbanks schools. Both of them use commercial television station airtime. They do not have their own educational television station. Anchorage has its own small production center. Fairbanks uses the commercial station facilities to produce its program. Both of them are still relying rather heavily on material that's produced outside the state of Alaska. The Bureau of Indian Affairs in Barrow uses the local cable television system for the distribution of some ITV programming that they receive from the Fairbanks and Anchorage schools, and some that they buy from outside sources. In educational radio, there is only one educational radio station in the state. It's located here on the campus of the university, KUAC. And then, in addition to this, there are several small videotape recorders for immediate playback use for use in individual schools and institutions around the state. Now, in addition to these things that have happened and have been proposed, I should also tell you that the commission has directed that we did begin right now and have been, I guess, for about a month or so now, determining ways in which instructional television particularly can be used in aiding rural education. And one of the things that the commission has discussed is the idea that the use of instructional television in Alaska rural schools may give us an opportunity to restructure the rural curriculum in a way that we haven't been able to do before. Many of you, I'm sure, have seen copies of the newly developed Alaska Reader getting into the area of relevant materials for rural schools. Television allows us the opportunity to shorten the time span between the conception of a curriculum and the time that it can actually be implemented, rather than going the textbook route and so on. It also gives us an opportunity to retrain and provide in-service training for teachers in use of these materials much more rapidly and much more conveniently than we could in the past. We've been talking with people here on the campus of the university who are concerned with rural education, with the consultants in the Department of Education, and with rural teachers in the field as to what subject matter areas are the ones that are most needful of some kind of aid. What grade levels are the ones that we need to concentrate on, and so on. And lastly, I think one of the things that the commission is quite concerned with, and I think rightly so, is particularly in the area of using television as an instructional aid to make sure that it becomes an integral part of the curriculum, whatever that curriculum is, that it's not something just added on top of what is already being done. It's not a, it's not icing on the cake. It becomes an integral part of what's going on. In many places, what's happened with educational television is there's an ongoing school program, an ongoing curriculum, and then a television station is established, or some sort of production center, and they begin to produce programming, and they produce things that put the classroom teacher in the position of having to make new and additional efforts than he's ever been forced to do before. If he wants to take advantage of television, he's got to isolate 20 minutes or 30 minutes of a certain number of periods a day or per week, and read the instructional guide and find out how he's supposed to prepare his class for the program, what he's supposed to do after the program is over. And it hasn't done anything at all to help him in the ongoing responsibilities that he's had all along in the classroom. And one of the things that we want to make sure we do is to make sure that whatever we do in Alaska with educational television, that we don't get into this laying on kind of business. We try to get television to help us do the basic job in a better and more efficient way.
Thank you, Mr. Northrup. I wonder if you could enlarge a little bit upon just what the responsibilities of this commission is going to be. Is it going to be to establish these stations? Is it going to be to develop the programs and put them on tapes or put them on TV circuits?
Well, I can only talk about what the commission has suggested the legislation be. It was not created by statute last year. But as the commission sees its responsibilities, it's one of encouraging the orderly and coordinated development of educational broadcasting facilities. It can own and operate them, but it need not. It can contract this operation to other agencies who may already be in place in certain areas and so forth. In terms of determining the programs, the commission doesn't see itself in that kind of a role. There are local school agencies, there are state school agencies, there are institutions of higher education who have the subject matter specialists who are concerned with these things. And it would be really outside the purview of the commission to begin to specify what kinds of content should be brought to.
I think that I'd like to have you comment a little further on just one thing. There is this expertise at the institutions, at the state agencies, say, public schools, the University of MU in Alaska, and community colleges and whatnot. Then where is this hardware for disseminating these programs? I don't believe, if I understand the situation correctly, it's a matter of getting the person with the expertise over here to the hardware. There's something in between that's very, very essential. And that's your production center, where you have the people with the technique for bringing these two things together in an effective manner. Ordinary classroom teacher is lost when he goes over to the hardware. And that's what we've got in the budget request for the university, is for the production center. We're not going to create the programs with the personnel here. But these are going to be, the people are going to help the experts put the program together so it is broadcastable, if there's such a word as this.
That's right.
And one other thing I should point out, the regions are already taking action for the University of Alaska to make application for to the federal FCC for for an educational broadcasting station. I think that was done at the October meeting of the board. Well, would you comment a little further about that production center idea, because it's so often lost?
Well, what you have in a production center already, or at an ETV station that is able to do this kind of production, are media specialists, people who understand the media, know how to use it, and or know how to use them, since we're talking about radio and television. And they're available there to help the subject matter people plan the courses, the programs they want to put on television or on radio. These media people can't determine what courses ought to be on television. They can't determine the content that should be presented, but they can certainly help in terms of how to present it, how to use each medium to its fullest.
If you're writing a book, this is about the point where the editorial staff of the publishing company comes into play between the writer, the author, and the printing press. This is about what we're talking about here. Without it, you don't have anything.
I should point out, the Education Broadcasting Commission is quite concerned about things that go that have to take place outside that production center. That is, the kinds of expenses that the institutions are likely to have to incur in order to utilize the medium. It's not quite the same. You can't take a university faculty member who perhaps you could consider a quarter or a third of his time spent teaching a course in the usual traditional manner. If he's going to be asked to put that course on television, he's probably going to have to be released from far more of his time for the semester or the year or however long to develop the course. He's going to have to take far more of his time to prepare that course, the presentation on television. Once that preparation has been made, then he's in a position, then the institution and the professor are in a position of having the thing on videotape, and it may be usable for several years before a major revision has to be made in it. But there is going to be an increased expenditure on the part of the institutions to plan and prepare materials, just from the point of view of the time of the subject matter.
Anybody have any questions?
President Elderman, this ties into the whole problem of internal communications among the inhabited places in the state of Alaska using the satellite. The propositions that come to us almost always obscure some of the basics. They tell you for $10 million per year, we can put the hardware in place so that every village, every inhabited place will have a reception from the satellite. And you get all this wonderful news and shows and whatnot coming in to you. But the difficulty is that there is not one penny in their plans for any of the software which makes the hardware really valuable to the community. And you have to watch it. RCA and all these others that come to you with plans and they try to sell the state on, for $10 million a year, we'll do all your communications hardware. And that frankly is only about 60% of the cost at most, three-fifths. There's another two-fifths on software, the programming type, which they never think of or they never mention.
Those kinds of expenses are ongoing and occur annually too.
Yes.
And the hardware costs are usually lump sum things with a certain annual amount to keep them in repair.
Operation.
Well, I don't even understand electric light bulbs, so I
that's crazy.
But aren't we talking about just millions and millions of dollars in this discussion? I mean, that's a yearly occurrence. We're not.
I don't know.
He hasn't given any figures yet. I've been waiting for them.
It depends entirely on how big a job you want the media to do for you. The kind of production center that we're talking about establishing, a production center and related station, can be operated at a rather basic level for between $300,000 and $400,000 a year.
Once you get it established.
Once you buy the hardware for it. The hardware will cost you about $1 million to put it on the air.
This
federal funding is available for 75% of that. Your hardware costs are not really the tough ones. The hardware cost to the state of Alaska would be equivalent to about 1 year's operation.
So then what does that do then to the areas that these will be serviced? Who bears that expense?
Now, the kicker here is that basic operational expense will allow the station to put together 3 or 4 hours of programming in the evening for general adult audiences, not credit programs, general public television programs. The main reason why they can do that rather cheaply is because most of it is, again, subsidized at the federal level. When you get into the instructional area, you want to start producing instructional programming. That budget might allow you to produce a couple of courses. Let's say 7th grade geography and 5th grade science. But if you went beyond that, you might have to start budgeting a couple hundred thousand dollars per course for what you wanted to do. But that's not what you'd have to incur right at the production center, but that would include release time for the faculty member to prepare the material, copyright clearances, whatever else is necessary to get the thing on television.
Mrs. Borden, may I just give you a little hint of what kind of dollars you're talking about? Dr. Northup has addressed himself only, for the most part, to a production center, a little bit in terms of the educational specifications for developing these programs. This is no different than developing specifications for building a house. You've got to give these specifications to a contractor. Here's what we want done. Here's the material we want in. Now, you put the finishing touches on. So, number one, you've got to have some people coming together writing educational specifications for a 7th grade geography program. You give this to production center, they work with some professionals, actors and professional people who develop these concepts and develop a program. Now, as long as you aren't spreading that program, as long as you have some federal funds, and ComSat and RCA are willing to invest a little seed money here for ultimately a large program, it isn't going to be too expensive. But the last meeting I set in an Anchorage on this, I believe, Dr. Northup, you may want to check some figures here. This was projected 2 or 3 years out in the future at a time there would be a dedicated satellite for the state of Alaska. The cost was somewhere in the neighborhood, including the servicing of 100 villages with communication satellite, approximately $12 million a year, as I recall. Now, they had broken this all down into the commercial interest, what they could afford, what other agencies could afford, and the one figure I remember was $40,000 a year for a village. 3 years hence, roughly, would cost $40,000 a year to get live television into that village, instructional educational television. So this gives you some idea of the kinds of costs you're talking about ultimately when we get into the larger program. Now that's at least 3 years away probably at the best, but they are moving rapidly in this direction, and I think in the next 3 or 4 years we may very well see a dedicated satellite for the state of Alaska through the ComSat domestic program, if they can get the authority to handle this domestic program. But it is expensive. Don't let anyone tell you differently. It's an expensive program, and I think you ultimately will have to look at the value of this as compared to whether we can spend our money and get more for the dollar in some other way.
Dr. Hartman, when you're talking about $40,000 a year for village, is there any assumption as to how many different courses would be put on for that?
I've forgotten the time element on that, but it would be, this would provide about 2 educational channels for the state, you see. Now, those educational channels would be available during the school day,
Now, not every program brought on that educational channel at any point in time would satisfy a third to a fourth grade class. It might be physics between 10 and 10:30. Well, some elementary school students are not going to get much out of a physics television program. But there may be on that second channel, educational television channel available, a third grade reading program or an art program or a music program or what have you, Bill. I believe it was, figure was including two educational television channels.
Let's get the satellite in perspective. I hope there aren't any members of the press out in the hall, but let's just look very realistically at satellites for a moment. A satellite is just a distribution system. It's like a piece of wire that can connect two things together. Doesn't give you any programs. Doesn't provide any lessons. All it is a way to get something from here to there, some kind of a message. And in Alaska, it looks like an attractive way to do it because we don't have to string wire over mountain ranges. And we don't have to run microwave stations out where we have to build roads to them and so on. Distance doesn't mean anything to a satellite. It's 22,300 miles up and 22,300 miles down, and it doesn't really matter where you are. But the state of the satellite art right now, today, is still fairly primitive. And when they talk about $40,000 per village, all you're buying is the dish that sits there in the village. All you bought is a receiver. You haven't bought any programs.
Now, excuse me, Dr. Norman, what I'm speaking of, the $40,000 per village would be the operational cost per year.
Right.
This is
well,
in addition to the equipment. Now, this still doesn't include the development of programs.
That's
in
right.
other words, I think educationally, Mrs. Landy and Frank, that we need another $10 million a year to develop programs. That's the software and turn the program up. So I would envision, even with, and this is the military coming in and paying part of this $10 to $12 million cost to keep this satellite moving. We need in the neighborhood of $20 million to $25 million a year to do the total job 3 years or 4 years from now, in addition to what the equipment will cost to get the thing going. Now, I think that's a proven. Pretty realistic figure of what we're talking about if you want to put it in dollars.
Yeah,
instead.
How many channels are you talking about?
Well, let me pursue what I was going after here for a moment, because right now there are many alternatives to the satellite that are more attractive financially. Many alternatives. That the satellite distribution system doesn't look very good right now because it costs too much money. You can put all this stuff on videotape and mail it out there and buy videotape recorders for every one of those villages for about a tenth of the cost. And you have your distribution system. How much educational material has to be so timely that it can't be delayed a couple of weeks in getting it? The satellite gives you immediacy. They do it here, they see it there. Just that fast. But you don't need that for almost 100% of the educational requirement. When we start talking about satellites, we're talking about a total communication system for Alaska. We're talking about a satellite that not only will deliver television signals, but will provide telephone service, telegraph service, data transmission, everything. And so the $40,000, what's that?
Football games.
Oh, well, I don't know about that.
10 hours of live service a year from the States. That would give you.
If you look down the road at what's on the drawing boards in terms of satellites, you start looking at receiving stations that can be purchased for $10,000. The next generation of satellites, be launched 72, 73, 74, the experimental ones. The operational ones will come along a year or so after that. Then we're beginning to talk about kind of a box with a dish on top that runs without a maintenance man there. It doesn't have helium-cooled parametric amplifiers. I don't know what it is. I can just tell you the name of it. But anyway, you don't have all those things to worry about some years hence. But right now, the satellite's not a very attractive alternative. And the kind of cost figures we're getting from two commercial companies, ComSat and RCA, And one of the things that you have to remember about communications companies is that they're public utilities and their profit is based on a percentage of investment. As long as the investment remains high, the percentage figure comes up with a larger gross. And so we talked about satellites right now. We're talking a very heavy investment and probably state subsidy in order to get these things out into the villages. No question but what satellite communication is economically viable for the major areas in Alaska right now. $250,000 a year can be amortized without much difficulty. Now, in terms of this millions of dollars for educational software, that's quite right if you want to put all your curriculum on television. But you may not want to do that. It depends on how much of the curriculum you want to put on television. What portions of what courses you want to put on television. And I'm not in a position to make a definitive statement, but I judge that probably these needs will vary from area to area in our state. That there are some districts right now probably would have their staff pretty well, they're offering a broad curriculum, they're able to fund it this way, they probably aren't going to want to put a lot of things on television. Further into the rural areas you get, it may be that you'll want to provide more and more opportunity on television. And so you write the check in terms of how much you want to do.
Dr. Northup, don't underestimate what it's going to cost us educationally to get ready. A half hour to an hour television program to supplement the Alaska Reader. I don't know, have any idea what just a half hour program would cost to supplement the Alaska Reader. Maybe Frank and Winifred do, but I think sometimes that we need to be very realistic about just what a half hour program would cost to supplement some portion of book one in the Alaska Reader. Frank, do you have any idea what a half hour program would cost?
No, we've talked about
it,
but it's in the several thousands of dollars.
Yeah, so I don't think that when I'm keeping $10 million a year, that I'm too far off in terms of just a few hours of program for the year.
It beats me if I
reduce this down to a figure how much does it cost to produce a half-hour program, recognizing that maybe this will be used a number of times during the year, but I think that the cost of here is going to be terrific if we do a good job.
Well, I was just going to comment that it beats the devil out of me how somebody that doesn't know how a light bulb operates can get us involved in a scientific discussion like this.
Haven't you been able to follow this?
Even if we go to the videotape method of distribution of instructional program, you still have the need for this production center that we have put in application for. Or if we use any of the other alternate methods to the satellite, which are much less expensive, you still have to have this place where you produce something. As you did in writing your new textbooks for the elementary schools, for the rural schools. You had to have a place where you produce that. You had poor foundation money to run that production center, didn't you?
It doesn't really, there are certain parts of this thing that are kind of be essential no matter how you distribute it.
That's it.
In the long run. And I've kind of been panning the satellite. It may be worth some expense at this time to make sure we're on the satellite road to reap the benefits that are going to come to us some years hence.
So how much, if any, would the state have to bear any expenses of commercial production? In other words, the football game that we've bandied around here. Well, that in itself is education. In other words, there's a lot of things that are going to be coming over that television set from that satellite that aren't a prescribed educational course that costs the state so much money.
Plays like hair and so forth.
Plays like hair.
The commercial broadcaster of the state, however, their theme song in the last 6 months has been something like, don't even talk about satellites because it costs people in Hawaii who have the ability to get stuff by satellite, they were in the same position we were in terms of getting commercial television programs 3 weeks late and so on. Well, they still are. They've got a satellite receiving station there, but they still can't use it because it's a CompSat station, and CompSat is tied to international rates. CompSat has no authority to operate domestically. It costs them in the neighborhood of $3,000 an hour to transmit programming out there. And the commercial broadcaster at that end, down there in Hawaii, has to pay for that. There's no indication right now that the commercial broadcaster in Alaska would be any better off. If we get approval for a domestic satellite system from the FCC in Washington, and somebody gets the authority to run a domestic satellite system, the assumption is that the rates will drop quite a bit in terms of commercial use. Now, nobody is talking about money for educational use of the satellite for long hops, like from the lower 48 to Alaska and so on. That will probably be provided free.
Thank you, Dr. Northrup. Dr. Wood has extended an invitation to all those present to accompany him to the
Rotary, or was it the Kiwanis?
The Rotary Club, all members of the two votes.
Really?
I guess. We have Dr. Ray, Dr. Theophilus, Dr. Smith back here, Dr. Wolf, and who all else are members of the Rotary Club. I think that does it.
They won't admit it.
And we'd like to have you be our guest. We'd like to introduce you down there. And let the Rotary Club know that you're in town.
We'll brag about you.
Yes, Dr. Norman.
I have some material. If anyone is interested in going a little further, I've got copies of the proposal to NASA as to how the satellite thing would work. I've got copies of the table of the proposal and so on. If you'd really like to do some heavy homework, I can provide you a copy of the
proposal. Well, fine, Greg, probably.
I just have one quick question. Is there any assessment of the value over teacher in the classroom of educational TV in the classroom?
There has been study after study on the effectiveness of educational television. What it boils down to is, if you take all of them, put them together, the overriding conclusion, there's no significant difference. That's the bane of a researcher's existence, but what it means is it's at least as good as. In some cases it's worse, and in some cases it's better, and it really usually depends on how it's produced and who you get to teach it, which is about the way it works in the classroom.
Well, we're going to come back at 1:30.
Can we come back at 1:30?
We'll continue this program here for the rest of the afternoon. Is that the schedule?
No, I think this afternoon they had other meetings. Did you, Dr.?
Yes, we do. We have kind of a heavy agenda for the next half of the day and full day tomorrow.
Our board of regents coming back. They got some work to do, unfortunately.
If they're, I assume that you need to leave right away, Dr. Wood. There may be some other things here that if there's time right now that you want to just make some brief statements on. Well, if you don't have the time, then we better.
I was going to call upon Dr. Wolf, who is Dean of the College of Behavioral Sciences and Education, and again, Vice President Boswell, to comment on these other items that we have here. We're very eager at the university, if I can summarize this, to do everything possible to improve our training of teachers for Alaskan schools. We see this as a major responsibility, and we know that while we've made tremendous gains in the last several years, there's a great deal more to be undertaken, especially here on the main campus and at our center that the regional center is developing in Anchorage. Now, we need your help, suggestions as to what we need to do that we aren't doing now other than volume. I think we graduate about 100 a year with teaching their credentials, and we have requests for about 3,000 teachers. So we need to spend a considerable time exploring this one together. In the same way, about the matter of the improving our field services, we we mount this as an effort from our faculty, say in the subject such as mathematics or the subject of economics or biology or English, working with the teachers in the public schools to the end that we have a better teaching exercise going on. That is, we provide some service during the regular teaching years to people in the classroom. And we, frankly, have never been funded to do the kind of job on that that is done in places where, in states where the community served are much closer together than they are in Alaska. And we need, I think, to plan together how we can improve that field service program. Out of these two things that we're talking about here comes a matter of articulation. So that what is being taught and learned at the elementary level has a relationship pretty directly to what is happening at the secondary, and what's happening at the secondary leads into what's going to happen after the secondary, both the academic credit type of programs and these vocational technical type. And I think we need to have a continuous exchange of information here to see that we don't have a big gap someplace along the line, that we think of education in the state as a continuum, and that the elementary and secondary, the preschool part fits in to what comes after the secondary level, and vice versa, what we undertake at the post-secondary level really ties on to something that was done at the elementary and the secondary and the preschool. That was all I think we're going to say. Dr. Wolf might want to comment on this. And Mr. Darnell, who is the head of the Department of Education, the one that I wanted to comment on. Do you have anything to add to that?
Well, actually, with the hour such as it is, it really would be inappropriate to get started. I think the main stress that we're looking to now, though, are a number of special projects that do answer the need that has arisen through inadequate education in the villages, as well as the traditional approach to teacher training. We presently have four special projects addressed to this subject. We have a grant from the Office of Education where we're preparing school administrators, but exclusively for the Bush. And these people will be doing internships in Bush locations. We're negotiating for a teacher corps contract for teaching, for preparing native village residents to be teachers. And this, I think, is maybe one of the big thrusts that the Office of Education is making, where to bring new people into teaching that heretofore have not been able to. This is a field-centered teaching program in cooperation with Dr. Hartman's office. We're in the negotiation stage with representatives of the Ford Foundation to carry on the work of the Rural School Project in an expanded version. When the project was initiated, one of the things that was talked to but not funded was the development of curriculum materials on a broad base for the village schools. The Alaska Readers Program was the one effort that we did have sufficient funds to get initiated. This in turn now in the production stage is paid for by the Northwest Regional Laboratory. But we're negotiating with them to expand this to be in essence a university-centered curriculum development element of the project, and would involve, I think, a considerable amount of funding. And these people in the foundation are interested in continuing it in this element. We'll meet with them next week. One other comment, so that as the things that we're planning, the positive side of it at this stage, we are also negotiating a contract with the Bureau of Indian Affairs for a bilingual education program that Mrs. Landy has just finished developing with them, where we will be carrying out a demonstration teacher training project, in part on the campus, in part in the field, where the instruction in the elementary schools will be given in the Eskimo language, with material specially prepared on the campus through the Department of Linguistics, a cooperative program between our department and linguistics, and where we will attempt to demonstrate the effectiveness of bilingualism as opposed to the present system where English only is used in the schools. And we have a research designed for this to compare schools both where the program is being tried and control units nearby in the Tuscaloosa area. There are others that I would certainly think would be worthwhile to discuss, but I know when the rotary bell rings, Dr. Wood, that...
Well, thank you very much, and apparently Dr. Sobolov and Dr. Hartman, the both boards have quite a bit of independent work to do, and so we'll have to cut this a lot shorter than I'm sure all of us would like to have done, but we've got a start now, a joint effort here, and I hope that we can continue each year. We want to appreciate, thank you for being here, and we appreciate the trouble you've taken to be here with us.
We appreciate your invitation, thank you.
And now, for the next 2 days, we're going to be reviewing your research program. We'll be inductoring and upinductoring. And last year was the instructional program. Next year is going to be the public service program. And we hold it usually about this time of year, about the first week in January. We certainly wish that you could join us and sit in on these discussions. Rotarians will pick people.
Yeah, we'll be at 2 in the
2 o'clock, just a review of what I've done.